With depression at all-time high levels, is there something better that we can offer than just antidepressants? Well, today let's talk about how we can use exercise as medicine to help treat depression. Let's get started. Welcome back, everybody, to the sixth episode of the fifth season of Building Lifelong Athletes podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Arnke. I'm a double board certified physician in sports and family medicine, and our goal here is to help keep you active and healthy for life through actionable, evidence-informed education. Thanks so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it. Today, we're talking all about exercise as medicine for depression. And we talk about this because if you know someone, either yourself or someone you know has been affected by depression or mental health issues, that is without a doubt. I mean, if you're saying, I don't know anybody, then you're living on a rock, that's for sure, because it is very prevalent and it is a huge problem. And how common actually is depression? Well, globally, about 350 million people suffer from depression each year worldwide. 350 million, that's a lot of people. And depression is the most serious non-fatal neuropsychiatric disease, meaning of the neuropsychiatric diseases, it is the one that has the most morbidity, meaning it affects the most people and causes the most serious damage. And it's predicted to be in the top three of all diseases by 2030, meaning that, you know, cardiovascular disease, all those other things, diabetes, depression will have the most serious consequences, potentially in the top three by 2030. So that is a huge burden on people socially, financially, on society in general. It's a lot of stuff. And in terms of lost days that we have towards anxiety and depression, about $1.15 trillion are lost annually. And that's going to, once again, triple by 2030. So we're losing $1.15 trillion annually in production for anxiety and depression. And obviously, that seems kind of callous. Like, oh, who cares about dollars and cents? And I agree. That's not the ultimate end goal, is to worry about the financial, you know, the bottom line there. But that's just going to show it's pervasive enough where it's affecting people in terms of they can't go to work, can't do the work, can't do the things they want to do. And so that's why I use that stat to show that, man, it is very pervasive. What about America in general? Well, in America, an estimated about 21 million adults in the United States had at least one major depressive episode. And this number is about 8.3% of all U.S. adults. So we talk about 21 million had a depressive episode, major depressive episode, 8.3% of all U.S. And when a major depressive episode, that is kind of like a clinical diagnosis. I mean, hey, we have met these criteria and then a major depressive episode. That is not including just feeling down or minor mood changes or anxiety. So that is a lot. In terms of the prevalence of major depressive episode, it was higher among adult females, about 10% of the adult females, and then compared to males, only 6%. And the prevalence of adults with major depressive episodes was highest among individuals 18 to 25, which is right around 18.6%, so around 20%. So we're seeing that the people who are most likely to be affected are females and those in that age range 18 to 25, which we're seeing a lot. If you're in clinic, man, this generation having lots and lots of issues with depression. And overall, another study looked at in 2020 found that about 18% of all Americans reported to be suffering with or diagnosed with depression last year. So about 20%, almost one in five people either are suffer with it or have been diagnosed with depression last year. That is a lot of people. Some additional not so fun facts in terms of depression is depression can lower life satisfaction more than having debt, more than divorce, and more than having something like diabetes. And it exacerbates underlying diseases like heart disease, anxiety, and cancer. So really setting the mood here, you know, setting a good vibe, but it's just really important to show that depression, most people think like, oh, like they're just down a bit. No, like it has huge ramifications for life in terms of life satisfaction, in terms of, you know, helping you manage other diseases. So it is pervasive and it affects every single aspect of life. It's not just one single component. And so now you might be asking, okay, cool. Thanks for those depressing stats, Jordan. But why are we talking about exercise as medicine? What's the big deal? Well, only about 51% of people who have diabetes have coverage for their depression treatments. And this is in high income countries. So about 50% of people can get coverage for their depression treatments in high income countries. Take that down to lower or lower middle class countries, that's only 20% of people. So meaning as many evidence-based treatments as possible. And exercise is great because last time I checked, it can be free. It has amazing side effect profile and is really, really beneficial for lots of other things as well. And so we talk about this because if we can figure out, hey, does this work? Is this something worth trying? Then we have an awesome treatment modality that is free and cost-effective and anybody can have regardless of socioeconomic status. And so now I want to talk about how does exercise actually improve mental health? Well, like most things in literature that have to do with neuropsychiatric diseases, we're not quite sure. And the full mechanism is not completely known. But there are some things that we want to talk about here. Most of the data is from rodent studies. As you know, those have lots of limitations. But we're going to talk about the things that we see for why exercise may be beneficial for someone who's struggling with depression. There are a couple of main categories. And we're talking about physiological, so, you know, kind of in the neurochemistry, neuroanatomy, and then also psychological reasons why exercise may be beneficial. We'll start with the psychological ones first. Some does exercise. Exercise may improve feelings of self-worth and self-esteem, may actually improve your self-efficacy as well, and self-confidence and life satisfaction. So pretty much exercising makes you feel good. It improves your self-worth, makes you just feel like, man, what's going on? I kind of think about, when has anyone ever really regretted a workout? Maybe the only time I've ever seen that is if someone's working out and they get hurt and something horrific happens. And I could see that, yeah, you regret that. But the vast majority of times when someone exercises, they say, man, I am so glad I did that. I'm feeling so much better. I feel just lighter. I have these endorphins running. I feel good. And I kind of equate this to like that feeling you get. It's kind of, you feel accomplished, right? After you work out, the workout's completed, you feel accomplished. And that's kind of what they're talking about in these studies here, is people having an improved feelings of self-worth, self-esteem, self-efficacy, meaning, hey, I did this. And so it's really important. And some studies I actually looked at showed that people just felt good to be alive after exercise. Obviously, that's not everybody, and we're not going to use that as just kind of the feeling that everyone has. But you know, I think it's pretty cool. If some people just feel good to be alive after exercise, I think we, most of us here who enjoy exercise, can kind of relate to that feeling like, man, I just feel good. Like I did something good for myself and I feel good. On top of that, exercise may also improve social connections and social support and reduce loneliness if done in a group. So that's the big thing about group exercise. When you get out there, you got someone doing group exercise, they're meeting other people, right? You're talking, you feel like you're part of a community. That can really improve social connections and decrease loneliness. And that may be a huge reason why people get benefit from exercise and from a depression standpoint. Now let's move on to the physiologic reasons for why exercise may improve depression. First things first is when you are exercising, you may have improved sleep quality. We talked about this in a previous podcast, but if you're sleeping better, pretty much everything gets better. And depression is no different. We do find that when people have issues with sleeping that they have worse depressive symptoms. So getting higher quality sleep may play a role in that. And finally, let's talk about neurotransmitters in exercise. Exercise may increase dopamine and noradrenaline in the central nervous system. And when I think of dopamine, I think kind of like the feel-good molecule, right? So after you complete that workout, yeah, you're just feeling good, the endorphins, quote unquote, that might be a release of dopamine. But there are multiple mechanisms for why exercise could be beneficial and why it may be helping with depression symptoms. Now I want to talk about what are the best types of exercise for depression. And cut to the chase, pretty much there's data showing that almost any activity can be helpful for depressive symptoms. But I want to break it down a little bit further here, kind of tease out what I saw in the literature. The most recent net analysis that I looked at show that, you know, things like dance had really large reductions in depressive symptoms. Also things like walking, jogging, yoga, strength training, and mixed aerobic exercise, Tai Chi, all had moderate reductions. So in this big meta-analysis, which is a study of study looking at, you know, putting together all these different studies, it seemed like dance had the largest reduction in depressive symptoms, followed by those other ones I talked about, like walking, jogging, strength training, things like that. And that being said, across multiple studies that I looked at, there's lots of reviews on this. The most consistent data seems to be that aerobic exercise of moderate intensity and group exercise seem to be the most beneficial for depressive symptoms. And they also talk about combined exercise, meaning resistance training and aerobic training. And it was beneficial, but it doesn't seem to be as beneficial as a single modality. Honestly, I'm not quite sure why that showed up. My guess is that there's not nearly as many studies looking at combined exercise training as opposed to like one single modality. And so there's probably a smaller number of studies looking at the combined. So that's why you can't, you know, quite figure out the signal from the noise there. But overall, there's lots of ways to do that. And on top of that, it seemed that the more vigorous activity, the more improvements we saw in symptoms. So that's one thing. And then from specific like demographics, some data showed that resistance training may be particularly beneficial for younger women, whereas yoga may be more beneficial for older men, which is kind of funny. If you think about who participates in yoga versus resistance training, usually it's like, okay, we think about men with resistance training and females yoga, but the opposite was kind of shown, meaning, hey, when we had younger women do resistance training, they seem to benefit from that. And whereas men were beneficial from yoga, that's not the only thing. It's like, it's not saying, hey, oh, they only benefited from this. They benefited from all the things, but they kind of did subgroup analysis saying, hey, the older men who did yoga seem to have more benefit. And I have no idea why, once again, the mechanisms are, we're not gonna be able to figure that out because it's just kind of, looking at observations and whatnot there. But I think it's kind of cool. I think there's something to like empowerment or doing something that's not normal, right? You know, a lot of times, fortunately, it's getting much more common now. And I'm a huge fan of that is, you know, younger women can sometimes be intimidated to go lift. And when they do that, it's a feeling of accomplishment and they feel good. Maybe that has something to do with it. Whereas men, you know, yoga is not something they typically do. And then they do that and realize, oh, I feel really good after this. So maybe it's just getting out of your comfort zone. And I don't know, I really like that, but I think it's kind of cool. So if I had a recap though, overall, exercise, pretty much whatever you want is fine. If you want to get out and move, the biggest thing is just moving and doing it, right? So dance, we can do running, jogging, yoga, strength training, mixed aerobic exercise, Tai Chi, pretty much like pick your poison, we can do it. And if you want to get the bigger benefit from it, doing it more vigorously, that would be beneficial as well. And so that's the type of exercise that people may do to improve their depressive symptoms. Next, let's talk about, is exercise better than antidepressant medication? That's kind of a big question and a loaded question. And first, let's step back. Why would I even ask this question? Aren't antidepressants the best treatment? Like, by far, isn't that like the thing? Hey, you have symptoms, you go to your doctor, get put on an antidepressant. And like, isn't that just, wouldn't it be malpractice to not put someone on medication? Well, let's dive a little deeper on that. First, let's talk about antidepressants and their side effects. They do have side effects. Anybody who says they don't is lying. They definitely do. And like I say, if something has an effect in your body, then you will have side effects. If a medication has no side effects whatsoever, then it probably is actually not doing anything in your body, right? Because we want physiologic change for our medication. And if we don't get the physiologic change, then yeah, we won't get side effects, but we also probably won't get effects at all. So antidepressants definitely have side effects. Some big ones we talk about in the office are sexual side effects. Some people may have issues with either, you know, getting an erection, their libido, or not being able to have or an orgasm, things like that. We are real side effects that we do see. Also, sometimes they can contribute to possible weight gain. And there's a very, very, very small chance that when you take these, you have an increased risk of suicidal thoughts. But these are all real side effects that can happen. And so it's important to talk about that. On top of that, antidepressants also have low remission rates and high recurrence rates. So remission meaning, hey, how long are we keeping the depressed symptoms away? It turns like on antidepressants, not that effective. And then high recurrence rate meaning it comes back. Only half of patients taking antidepressant achieve clinical treatment efficacy, meaning a decrease in symptoms of about 50% in one study I was looking at. So people took it, only half of them got to their significant decrease in depressive symptoms. So something to think about, they don't work all the time. And another reason why we talk about side effects is that exercise has pretty much like no side effects. Obviously, you can have some occasional soreness or maybe an injury, and super, super, super rare if you're not exercising, you know, and you haven't done it forever and you do it, could there be an issue with cardiac stuff? Very, very unlikely. I would reference you to either the EPAR MedX, the online calculator that you can use to kind of check to say, hey, do I need to talk to a doctor, or just talk to your doctor before exercising. If you haven't exercised, it's worth talking to someone before you exercise, that's for sure. And on top of all these side effects we mentioned before, antidepressants don't always work. A large percentage of people don't get any effect from them. And it doesn't seem to keep it away long-term for a lot of people. And so when I'm thinking of all those things, like, okay, well, yeah, that kind of seems awkward. Like, well, I thought they were just like the best thing. And the more I dig and kind of look at the research, it just seems like the antidepressants, although a very helpful tool in the whole puzzle, kind of piece of the puzzle, they don't seem to be as awesome as everyone necessarily thinks they are. And then when we're also prescribing antidepressants and exercise, we need to consider the population, right? So most of the data that we have looking at exercise or antidepressants, a lot of times it's in adults, and it's hard to extrapolate to pediatric patients specifically. There are plenty of like SSRI studies and looking at SSRIs and adolescents and pediatric patients, but like exercise wise, it's almost like all adults, and it's pretty hard to extrapolate that into adolescents and kids. But it's pretty easy saying, hey, exercise is probably not gonna be bad for them, right? And then most of the studies that we looked at in terms of exercise and depressive, they're kind of looking at mild to moderate depressive type symptoms. You know, obviously it's challenging ethically to say someone who has like horrible, awful depression, just be like, okay, I'm gonna put you in this control group and you're not gonna get an SSRI, we're just gonna do exercise. Ethically, that'd be very hard to get past an IRB. And so most of the data that we look at here are specifically looking at mild or moderate depression. There are a couple of severe ones in there, but usually those are in combinations of things. And so when I was looking at the data overall, there are a couple of meta-analyses that kind of compare them. And it was actually really interesting. Meta-analysis that I saw, they showed that SSRIs by themselves didn't seem to have significant improvement outcomes, but SSRIs plus exercise did. And overall, though, when looking at multiple modalities, exercise seemed to be as effective as psychotherapy or antidepressants. So they looked at a bunch of studies, right? So meta-analysis is a study of studies, looking at a bunch of different studies. And overall, the trend, I don't want to bore you with every single detail, it seemed that SSRIs like maybe helped, plus or minus, when you added exercise to SSRIs, it seemed to help. But then when you looked at just exercise by itself, it was just as good as psychotherapy or antidepressants. And so one meta-analysis they looked at, they specifically looked at psychotherapy seemed to be a little better than antidepressants in terms of just reliability of consistently showing improvements. Antidepressants were kind of hit or miss, but exercise, once again, always like was showing that it had improvements. And so I thought that was crazy. It overall looks like exercise can be just as effective as antidepressants, which is awesome. And not necessarily what everyone would think, not necessarily what I would think. And that's why looking at this is so interesting and eye-opening that, hey, is this something that we should be considering in terms of we should be prescribing exercise as a treatment for depression? Just something to think about. And so maybe you've listened to this now and think, okay, like I should probably be exercising. That might be helping with my mood. How do I actually exercise for depression? Well, I'm going to walk you through kind of a framework, kind of the stepwise approach to how to exercise for depression. First things first, is exercise even an option for you, right? First thing, if we talk about motivation, maybe, you know, someone absolutely refuses to exercise due to their depression. And that's why I always talk about this. This is a caveat. This is a piece of the puzzle. It's never just one modality. Like say someone comes into my office and says, I'm super down. I can't do anything. I can't get out of bed. I can't drag myself out of bed. And I'm not eating. I'm not sleeping. I'm not doing anything. To say to them, hey, start exercising right now. They're gonna be like, no, I came for help and I can't do that. So meeting the patient where they're at, super important. If they say they have no desire to exercise, right? They can't do anything. They can't even drag themselves out of bed. Then it might be out of touch for me to say, you need to start exercising. I will talk about it and say, hey, let's encourage it. But maybe that person, an SSRI or some sort of psychotherapy, is kind of what we need to get the ball rolling. And then we can add an exercise at any time during this process. It's not like a, hey, let's start a medication and we'll see how that goes. And then at, like, if that fails, we can try exercise. No, like, we're going to do multimodal approach. I'm always going to tell people to exercise. I'm always going to mention it, but I may have to meet people where they need to go. And if they can't do exercise at the time, then that's fine. I'm not going to judge them for that. Meet them there and we'll go from there. On top of that, I think about, is this an option for you from a safety perspective? Do you have a safe space to do it in? Meaning not necessarily like this is going to be worse for their mental health, but like maybe they can't go outside. They live in the city or they don't have access to live in a bad area where, you know, there's lots of crime or potential like violence. We have to think about, hey, do they have activity room, safe space to do this? Can they get outside in a green space? All these things to consider. That's less of a reason because you can obviously still do exercise inside, but something we have to consider as well that everyone may not have the resources that you have. So we have to kind of meet them there. So that's our first step is, hey, is exercise even an option? Then the second step, let's find an exercise they want to participate in. So a prescription is no good if someone has no intent to take it, right? So let's say I prescribe a high blood pressure medication, someone who is anti-medication saying, absolutely not, I will not take the medication. It's a waste of a prescription because they're going to be like, okay, well, this doctor's not listening to me and they're not hearing what I'm saying and I'm just walking out here. I'm not going to do that. So same thing with this. If you say, hey, you really need to be hitting 150 minutes of moderate aerobic activity and 2 days of resistance training and you have to do these things, they're going to be like, and someone who hates doing all those things, that's not a recipe for success. So find something that they wouldn't mind doing and then go with that. That's the perfect routine for them. And then we can kind of tweak things from there. So if someone's like, oh, I really enjoy a Zumba class or a dance class, like I'd love to do that. Then cool, that's great. Let's start with that. Or if they say, hey, I'd love to get back in lifting. I used to do that. Awesome. Let's start there. Doing something is much better than nothing. And we can kind of tweak things over time once we get the ball rolling. I'm all about getting small wins, kind of getting that snowball going, get those small wins, and then we can tweak things. It's much easier to move a moving snowball. If you think about an analogy going downhill, you can kind of nudge it and it'll have a much easier correction as opposed to starting it and trying to move it from the start where there's no momentum going. So that's kind of how I think about all my treatments is let's get momentum going and then go from there. And then third, after we've talked about, hey, can they do it? What do they want to do? Let's prescribe. So treat it like a medication, prescribe exercise, even if it's just small, start off with 10 minutes a day, that's it. And then fourth, we're going to increase the dose and intensity as able for them. So it's kind of that 4-step process there. We're identifying, hey, like, is this an option for them? 2, you know, do what exercise do they want to do? 3, prescribe it to them. And 4, increase the intensity and dose as able. So an example here, just patient the other day, this is for diabetes specific, but would work for depression as well. Said, hey, what are we doing for exercise? And they said, pretty much nothing. And so what you can do then is say, hey, all right, cool. Let's start with 10 minutes of walking daily, maybe just 10 minutes. Or if they say they can't do that 3 times a week, whatever it is, meet them where they're at, go there. So let's start with 10 minutes, then slowly build up to 30 minutes per day. And maybe even 5 days a week, then boom, we've hit our aerobic exercises that we need to. If we can do it 7 days a week, that's great. And maybe we're doing 7 days a week of 30 minutes of walking and then add in or swap 2 days of resistance training. And then boom, we are at the physical activity guidelines right there. So this is going to be gradual. This is not going to happen over the course of a day. You know, if we're doing 10 minutes a day, let's just start there. Let's rock that out for maybe a couple weeks, see how they're doing, and then increase up to 15 or 20 and slowly work it up. So it's never a big jump, right? We want slow wins, build that habit of getting exercise and go from there. And so that is as simple as it is for as a physician. You can say, hey, this is what I want you to do. I want you to do 10 minutes of walking every day. When you're telling them what to do, it's a lot easier than saying, hey, you should exercise. Then it's like, okay, cool. And then they won't do that. Whereas a prescription kind of gives them something, hey, this is definitive what I would like you to do. And so the next question I want to talk about is how should physicians treat depression? And after looking at the literature, it seems that we've probably been greatly under-prescribing exercise for depression. And as physicians, we should be prescribing exercise as a treatment for depression in every single patient. These are my thoughts for that. 1, it is very low risk, high reward, meaning the risk of exercise for the vast majority of people is very, very low, very low risk. Maybe you sprain an ankle, maybe you strain something, I don't know. But you can even do light exercise where the risk of that happening is incredibly low as well. So very low risk with a huge reward. If we can have exercise, which is so low risk, and then maybe get the benefits or more of an antidepressant medication on someone's mood, that is huge. Like, to me, that's That's a no-brainer, really, essentially what it is. And honestly, the data on SSRIs is not great. And the more I look into it, exercise just seems to be just as good. And so why wouldn't I prescribe that? But once again, though, we will prescribe it every single patient, but we have to meet patients where they're at and help them. So understand that. The next big point is that this is a multimodal approach. For me, I always prefer a multimodal approach for everything. When we're looking at literature, it's better to not have a multimodal approach, right? It's better to say, hey, you with depression here and you here, you get exercise and you don't, you just do normal stuff. Like that is ideal for research. So we can say, hey, what is the effect of this intervention? But you are not a study. This is the real world. So I want to throw everything, all the tools that I have at you to help you feel better. So I think the best combo to start for someone, if you said, hey, like Dr. Renke, I have mild or moderate depression. What are the best things to do? I would start with exercise and psychotherapy if depression is not severe. I would say that's where I would go. I think the meta-analysis, the most recent one I looked at, seems to point that exercise and psychotherapy are the better ones to start with. Not that medication is necessarily all bad, but there are side effects, right? There's not really side effects to psychotherapy or really exercise. So I like to start with the least invasive thing possible and then work my way up because every medication does have potential side effects. But if someone is severe in their depression, I would probably start a medication as well. So I'd prescribe exercise, I would refer to psychotherapy, but I would also start a medication as well because once again, it's a multi-pronged approach and maybe, you know, there's different modalities. We want to hit it from different angles, right? From exercise, the benefits we're getting there versus the medication versus the psychotherapy. There's different pathways for why we have depression. And that's kind of a whole nother discussion and podcast. But I want to hit it from as many angles as possible to give us the best chance for success from our treatment. But exercise will always be the pillar, right? If I think about exercise or any sort of treatment, I think about like a big pyramid. The base of the pyramid is going to be physical activity. Whether this is rehabbing an injury or treating something from a metabolic standpoint or depression, exercise, get that. The least invasive ones possible as our base of treatment, kind of the natural ones that don't have big risk of side effects. And then we can start working our way up with more intensive things, whether that's psychotherapy or medications, kind of working up the pyramid. And that's how I like explain things to patients is that the base, the big base of the pyramid should be the least, you know, the least invasive things that we have. From a medication perspective, those are gonna be towards the top where they're more invasive, gonna have risks and all things. So from the bottom, it's gonna be kind of the lifestyle medicine, lifestyle changes that I'm always harping on there. But I always want to make sure that we're talking about the big things. So we're going to talk about the exercise and also sleep. We're going to talk about sleep and depression. So just lifestyle medicine in general. I will always harp that. That's like my thing. I'll always say that. But I'm going to start broadly working on lifestyle factors and then kind of work my way up if we need to work to psychotherapy and then medications as need be. And it's always fluid, right? Some people, if it's a, they can't go in there, they can't do exercise, then we'll put in a medication potentially. Meeting people where they're at. No one person is the same as the other person. So it's going to be a personalized approach. At least that's how I think you should do it. So that's going to be it for today. Thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it. If you are listening to this, that really does mean the world to me. You could be spending your time anywhere. And the fact that it's with me, like I said, it means a lot. So if you want to follow along though, click the link in the description to sign up to my newsletter. You receive periodic emails on when new content is released. They'll never be junk. I hate junk, I promise you. But thanks again for listening. Now get off your phone, get outside. Have a great rest of your day. Disclaimer, this podcast is for entertainment, education, and informational purposes only. The topics discussed should not solely be used to diagnose, treat, or prevent any condition. The information presented here was created with an evidence-based approach, but please keep in mind that science is always changing, and at the time of listening to this, there may be some new data that makes this information incomplete or inaccurate. Always seek the advice of your personal physician or qualified healthcare provider for questions regarding any medical condition.